We would like to send out a special thanks to Toxic, the Britney Spears Story podcast, for sponsoring The Trail When Cold. Listen and follow along to Toxic, the Britney Spears Story on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Pandora, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thank you, and enjoy the show.
May 25th, 2000. Mercer County, Pennsylvania. After last being seen at a convenience store, 46-year-old Sandra K. Baker supposedly phones her fiancé, Billy Cray Jr., to say that she is in danger and cannot return home, but she is never heard from again. 5 years later, Billy is named as a suspect in Sandy's disappearance after a private detective he once hired named Clifford Ailey is charged with lying to law enforcement. Ailey reveals that he heard Billy confess to Sandy's murder, but without a body or any other corroborating evidence, no murder charges are ever filed, and Sandy remains a missing person. After that, the trail went cold. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and today we're going to be exploring an unsolved missing persons case, the 2000 disappearance of Sandra K. Baker. This case was originally suggested to me over 2 years ago by a listener named Katie, and I have to admit that I had never heard of it before. On the surface, this might sound like one of those stories where a woman goes missing and it seems obvious that her spouse was the guilty party, but it contains some very unique complications. At the time she vanished, Sandra K. Baker was living with her fiancé, Billy Cray Jr., and they were planning to get married within the next 6 months, but she would vanish without explanation, and Billy would always maintain that he received a phone call from her in which she expressed her fear that her life was in danger. Well, it turned out that before Sandy went missing, Billy had hired a private detective named Clifford Ailey to perform a background check on her, and Billy was apparently not happy with some of the information that was uncovered. Years later, Ailey would be charged with 4 felony counts of hindering the apprehension or prosecution of the person who killed Sandra K. Baker, as he had lied to the police about his involvement in this case on multiple occasions. In a surprising turn of events, Ailey would reveal that he heard Billy confess to Sandy's murder, but since there were major credibility issues with Ailey, he would be the one who ended up spending time in prison while Billy was never charged, though investigators still considered him to be a suspect. There are definitely a number of suspicious details pointing towards both men, but the waters of this case have become so muddied that it's tough to determine what the actual truth is. The only thing we know for certain is that Sandra K. Baker has still never been found, so we're going to explore all the different sides of this complex case on today's episode. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now delve into the disappearance of Sandra K. Baker. Our story begins in 2000 in Mercer County, Pennsylvania, and our central figure is 46-year-old Sandra K. Baker, who goes by Sandy. Even though she originally hails from Florida, Sandy made the move to Pennsylvania the previous year and would become engaged to her 45-year-old fiancé, William Thomas Cray Jr., who goes by the name Billy. It's been reported that Sandy and Billy were living together on Folk Road in Delaware Township at a home which belonged to Billy's parents, though it's not entirely clear to me if his parents were living there with them at the time. Regardless, the couple is planning to get married in October, And while Billy already has two marriages under his belt, Sandy has previously been married no less than 6 times. Sandy also has 2 children from one of her past marriages, named Sean Krebs and Shadara Binkley, who both live in other states, but still maintain close relationships with her. Sandy and Billy originally met each other while she was visiting her friend Linda Henry, who happened to be an acquaintance of Billy's and lived in the nearby borough of Greenville. But on May the 25th, Linda received a surprising phone call from Billy, who told her that he last saw Sandy sometime between 8:30 and 9 a.m. that morning at the Sheets convenience store on Pennsylvania Route 18 in Pymatuning Township. Later that day, at around 1 p.m., Billy said he received a frantic phone call from Sandy, who told him that she was in danger and was unable to return home. Sandy said she would phone Billy again in a few days, but after that, neither Billy nor anyone else heard from her, so Billy decided to contact the Pennsylvania State Police and officially report Sandy missing on May the 31st. A check of the security tapes at the Sheets convenience store did confirm that Sandy had been there on the morning of the 25th, as it showed her driving away alone in her vehicle, a dark blue 1988 Honda Accord with Florida license plates, including a front vanity plate with Sandy inscribed on it. After that, one of the only reported sightings of Sandy was from a witness who claimed they saw her driving this vehicle southbound towards the town of Sharon. According to everyone who knew the couple, Billy was frequently paranoid and suspicious of Sandy, and even though Billy initially agreed to be questioned by police, it wasn't long before he retained the services of an attorney and stopped cooperating with the investigation. In the years following her disappearance, there would be no activity on Sandy's bank accounts or credit cards, and since she never made any attempt to contact her friends and family, they feared that she had become the victim of foul play. Well, it turned out that on May the 27th, 2 days after Sandy was last seen, her abandoned Honda Accord was discovered at the Shenango Valley Mall in the town of Hermitage, located about 12 to 13 miles southwest of Delaware Township. However, it was not actually found by law enforcement, but by the car's finance company, who had it repossessed because there was a lien on the vehicle, since Sandy had fallen behind on her payments. Since they had no idea the car was connected to a missing persons case, the company had it auctioned off. Investigators would not learn about this until 2004, and managed to track down the Accord to a scrapyard, but by this point, it had been crushed and destroyed, and any potential evidence it might have contained was gone. The case would take a surprising turn in June of 2005, when the Pennsylvania State Police announced the arrest of Clifford Stephen Ailey, a 47-year-old private detective who lived in the borough of Ambridge and operated the Sloan Detective Agency out of Newcastle. After a warrant was issued for Ailey's arrest, he remained a wanted fugitive for 5 days before he turned himself in. He would be charged with 4 felony counts of hindering the apprehension or prosecution of the person who killed Sandra K. Baker, and the arrest warrant affidavit for Ailey identified Billy Crea as a suspect. Ailey promoted himself as a specialist who could dig up background information on spouses, and since Billy was a friend of his, he hired Ailey to perform a background check on Sandy shortly after they got engaged. Billy was shocked to learn that not only had Sandy previously been married 6 times, but she was still legally married to her previous husband in Florida at the time of their engagement. Ailey also dug up information to show that Sandy was struggling financially because she was behind on her car payments and other bills. Prior to his arrest, Ailey had been questioned about Sandy's disappearance on multiple occasions, and the 4 felony counts were based on him lying to law enforcement when asked about these 4 pieces of information. When he last had contact with Billy, if Billy hired him to perform a background check on Sandy, if he knew what kind of car Sandy drove, and if he was in Mercer County on May the 25th, 2000. When questioned during the early stages of the investigation, Ailey denied allegations that Billy had hired him to perform a background check on Sandy, maintaining that he didn't even know her and was unaware they were engaged. Since Billy worked as an electrician, Ailey claimed that the last phone conversation he had with him was about electrical work. Following the discovery of Sandy's car in 2004, Ailey would be re-interviewed by police multiple times, but he kept changing his story and contradicting himself, particularly when investigators uncovered evidence that he had obtained information about Sandy's personal and financial history and provided it to Billy 2 weeks before she went missing. Cell phone records would show that Ailey did receive a phone call from Billy on May the 25th, 2000, and even though Ailey had denied being in Mercer County on that particular date, the phone records placed him in the area. Following his arrest, Ailey finally admitted that the day before Sandy's disappearance, Billy had given him detailed information about Sandy's Honda Accord and its finance company. He asked Ailey to call the company and inform them that the abandoned car could be found in the parking lot of the Shenango Valley Mall so that the repo men would show up there to collect it. Ailey also told police that the next time he saw Billy was when they met up at a restaurant 3 days later on May the 28th, where Billy appeared to be nervous and upset. According to Ailey, Billy proceeded to show him that day's newspaper, which contained a story about Sandy's disappearance, and he would confess to being responsible for her murder. Following Ailey's background check, Billy said that he decided to tap one of the phones inside the residence and uncovered evidence that Sandy was having an affair. When he confronted her about this, the situation escalated into a heated argument, which led to Billy strangling Sandy to death. Afterward, Billy placed Sandy's body inside a container and drove to an area about 5 to 8 miles from their home, where he said that he buried the container at a spot where, quote-unquote, no one will trip over it. While police did eventually perform a search of this particular area, they found nothing. When the Mercer County District Attorney's Office learned of Ailey's story, they told him that if his statements were truthful and he had no physical involvement in Sandy's murder, he could receive a plea deal where he would be able to avoid prison time in exchange for his cooperation. In November of 2005, Ailey testified in open court at an evidence suppression hearing and shared the same story about overhearing Billy's confession to Sandy's murder, but this time, he threw in an additional detail that the authorities had never heard before. Ailey now claimed that while they were leaving the restaurant, Billy threatened to kill his children if he ever told anyone about his confession. While investigators found this story to be suspicious, because if Ailey had told the truth and revealed that his children were in danger back when he was first interviewed in 2000, they could have protected the children and arrested Billy for murder. This prompted the authorities to give Ailey a lie detector test, which he wound up failing, as the polygraph examiner said the results showed that he was being untruthful when asked questions about his potential involvement in Sandy's disappearance and his knowledge about where her body was. As a result, Ailey's potential plea deal fell through, and he would go on trial to face the charges against him in January of 2006. After deliberating for only 90 minutes, the jury found Ailey guilty on 3 of the felony counts, though he was found not guilty on the 4th count of lying about being in Mercer County on May the 25th, 2000, since the jury felt he made that lie merely to protect himself rather than hinder the apprehension or prosecution of the person who killed Sandy. Nevertheless, Ailey received the maximum sentence of 18 to 48 months in prison, which he would serve at the state correctional institution at Frackville. However, Ailey soon had additional time added to his sentence for other offenses. While he was incarcerated in the Mercer County Jail awaiting trial, Ailey had threatened to kill some guards and Mercer County Sheriff's deputies, so in September of 2006, he received an additional 4 to 12 month sentence, which would not begin until his previous sentence for the other charges was completed. Before he could be released, Ailey faced additional legal trouble when he pleaded guilty to 2 federal charges of possessing unregistered firearms in December of 2009. As you recall, when a warrant was originally issued for his arrest 4 years earlier, Ailey had been a wanted fugitive for 5 days, but before he turned himself in, he took the opportunity to transfer these firearms from a trailer he owned to a storage unit. While conversing with family members on the phone from the Mercer County Jail, Ailey asked them to get rid of the firearms before law enforcement found them, but these conversations were recorded and used as evidence against him. As a result, he wound up being sentenced to an additional 39 months in prison. Throughout all of Ailey's legal issues, Billy never showed up to any of his court proceedings or publicly commented on the situation, aside from statements from his attorney denying that Billy had any involvement in Sandy's disappearance. In February of 2008, at the request of her 2 children, Shadara and Sean, Sandy was legally declared deceased by a Mercer County Common Pleas judge. Even though Shadara had only met Billy on one occasion, and Sean never met him at all, they both expressed their belief that he was responsible for their mother's disappearance. On November the 28th, 2011, Billy was found dead at his home in Otter Creek Township after a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. By this point, Billy was suffering from cancer and had been receiving hospice care, but he did not leave behind a suicide note or any information about what might have happened to Sandy. At the time of his death, the Mercer County District Attorney referred to Billy as a person of interest in Sandy's case, though he stopped short of calling him a suspect. In spite of Clifford Ailey's story about Billy's alleged confession to Sandy's murder, the authorities believed that his testimony was all over the place and did not consider him to be a credible witness, so they ultimately felt there was not enough evidence to file charges against Billy. While Ailey was in prison, Sandy's best friend, Linda Henry, wrote him two letters in which she encouraged him to reveal everything he knew and even went so far as to offer him the $6,000 reward which was being made available for information, but Ailey never responded. In November of 2012, the Sharon Herald newspaper published an article in which they revealed that Ailey was serving the remainder of his federal sentence at a Pittsburgh halfway house, and he was scheduled to be released the following January. The article discussed the possibility of Ailey being offered immunity to reveal the location of Sandy's body, and even though her two children openly supported this idea, it never came to fruition, and I have no idea of Ailey's current whereabouts. So after two decades, Sandra K. Baker continues to remain a missing person. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. But before we continue, we would like to send out a special thanks to this week's sponsor, Toxic, the Britney Spears story. I'm sure many of you have been following the Britney Spears saga, which has dominated the headlines this past year, because even though she is an iconic figure who has provided the soundtrack for so many people's lives, she has had no control over her own life. Well, now comedians Tess Barker and Babs Gray are here to bring you a new investigative podcast that dives deeper into Britney's mysterious situation than anyone else ever has. You might know Tess and Babs from Lady to Lady or the now legendary Britney's Gram podcast. Years ago, they both launched the hashtag Free Britney movement and started digging more into Britney's conservatorship and the court system that has allowed it to continue. It's a pretty remarkable situation, and you really don't want to miss hearing what they found out. So on this podcast, you can join Tess and Babs as they talk to exclusive sources, examine new sides of the story, and uncover disturbing truths about her legal system that go way beyond Britney. I would be the first to admit that I used to have a very limited knowledge about the situation involving Britney's conservatorship, and found the whole thing to be confusing, but Toxic, the Britney Spears story, does a pretty effective job at clarifying and conveying all the facts of this story, and it's a real eye-opener. Regardless of whether you're a devout Britney fan or just a casual listener, once you start listening to this podcast, you'll be unable to stop. So listen and follow along to Toxic, the Britney Spears story on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Pandora, or wherever you found your podcasts. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of this episode. Sadly, this is not the only case I've come across in which someone has gone missing, and the person believed to be responsible winds up dead before they can face justice or reveal the truth about what happened. It's particularly frustrating when the suspected perpetrator decides to kill themselves and does not even have the decency to leave behind a suicide note with the location of the victim's body. Now, it's likely that a number of these suicides took place because the suspect was overwhelmed with guilt or they felt the walls closing in on them and they believed they would eventually get caught. But in this particular case, Billy Crea was receiving hospice care because he was suffering from cancer, so regardless of whether he was guilty or innocent of the disappearance of Sandra K. Baker, you can understand why he would elect to shoot himself rather than face a potentially protracted and painful death. Though once again, if Billy was responsible, it's pretty cowardly that he did not leave behind a note revealing the truth. However, what makes this particular case unique is that we have one other person, Clifford Ailey, who may know where Sandy's remains are, and while he served time in prison for hindering the investigation, the person who was suspected of committing the actual murder was never charged with anything. Under normal circumstances, you'd assume that the testimony of an alleged collaborator would have been enough to arrest Billy for murder, but Ailey proved to be such an unreliable witness that the authorities were reluctant to file charges without additional corroborating evidence. The breaking point occurred when Ailey failed a polygraph test, as the results supposedly showed signs of deception when he was asked about whether he was involved in Sandy's disappearance or knew the location of her body. Now, I'm sure you're all well aware that polygraphs are not always reliable, so these results certainly don't prove that Ailey was complicit. But it's worth mentioning that Ailey was going to be offered a plea deal to avoid prison time, as long as he had no physical involvement in Sandy's murder. Ailey's story was that he was not present when Billy killed Sandy and disposed of her body, and the extent of his involvement was making a phone call to a finance company to arrange for the repossession of Sandy's vehicle. However, it's certainly possible that Ailey was a lot more involved in the crime than he let on, which is why he could not reveal the full truth about what happened and failed to polygraph. For all we know, Ailey's story about hearing Billy confess to Sandy's murder might be fabricated, and Billy could very well be completely innocent. Well, before we discuss this any further, we have to talk about the victim, Sandra K. Baker, as I would really love to know more details about her background. I mean, she was 46 years old and had already been married no less than 6 times, and her upcoming marriage to Billy was going to be number 7. Unfortunately, there's virtually no information available about any of Sandy's previous marriages and why they fell apart. It sounds like Sandy and Billy had been together for about a year before she went missing, and they got engaged while she was technically still married to her last husband, which apparently came as a complete surprise to Billy. Sandy's best friend, Linda Henry, has always been a major advocate for her case, and once mentioned that Sandy just had a tendency to fall hard for men she liked. If that's the case, then Sandy may have ended up rushing into most of her marriages way too quickly, which is why they didn't work out. Here, Sandy was willing to relocate from Florida to Pennsylvania in order to be with Billy, but even though her 2 children barely knew him, they thought she seemed pretty happy with the situation. During the early stages of the investigation, it sounds like the police did not treat Sandy's disappearance as a potential homicide, and were leaning towards the idea that she could have taken off voluntarily, possibly because she had cold feet about her upcoming wedding. I mean, in many cases, that idea is pretty ridiculous, but she had already gone through 6 marriages and seemed like a fairly impulsive person, so I guess it's not unreasonable to have considered the possibility that she took off. At the time, there was no direct evidence of foul play, and Sandy's car disappeared along with her, though as we're going to discuss momentarily, that may have been part of a calculated plan to throw off the investigation. Billy was described as being jealous of Sandy, which is supported by the fact that he secretly hired Clifford Ailey to perform a background check on her. There have never been any public accusations of Billy being violent or abusive towards Sandy, but he also went through 2 previous marriages of his own, and an incident with his second wife, Deborah Crier, did not paint Billy in a very flattering light. According to Deborah, after they separated, she filed a restraining order against Billy, but he unexpectedly showed up at their home in Austintown, Ohio, on October the 31st, 1997. Deborah subsequently went to the police to report the incident, but even though she never mentioned Billy being violent towards her in her original statement, she soon changed her story. Deborah now claimed that when Billy showed up, he proceeded to beat and abduct her at gunpoint, but she did not share this with the police the first time around because she feared Billy would come back and kill her. While Deborah wanted to file charges against Billy for domestic violence, the authorities were reluctant to do so because of her conflicting stories. In the end, Billy only wound up being convicted of a misdemeanor for violating the restraining order, and he received a sentence of 2 years probation. After his divorce with Deborah was finalized, Billy moved to Mercer County and eventually started his relationship with Sandy. What's particularly interesting about this incident is that Deborah claimed that Clifford Ailey was with Billy when he showed up at her home to attack her, though as far as I can tell, no charges were ever filed against Ailey. While Billy used the services of Ailey's detective agency to perform his background check on Sandy, the 2 men were already friends, and the fact that Ailey was allegedly at Billy's side when he attacked one of his ex-wives is pretty unsettling. This does suggest they were close enough that Ailey may have been willing to go above and beyond the call of duty to assist Billy if he did something to Sandy. Well, it probably wouldn't surprise you to learn that Ailey already had a checkered history before he was arrested on charges connected to this case. Ailey operated his private detective agency in Lawrence County, and in June of 2004, the local district attorney filed a lawsuit to revoke Ailey's private detective license since he allegedly employed someone at his agency who had a felony record. I'm not sure how that lawsuit turned out, but Ailey would face additional legal trouble in April of 2005 when he was convicted of simple assault for the use of physical violence against his girlfriend, and he received a sentence of 2 years probation. Even after he went to prison, Ailey kept getting hit with new charges which added time to his original sentence, so he was obviously not an exemplary human being. But how far would this guy be willing to go to cover up a murder? So let's look at the timeline of events on the day Sandy disappeared. The last confirmed sighting of her took place when she frequented a convenience store between 8 and 9 a.m., as surveillance footage showed Sandy driving away alone in her vehicle. Now, Billy claimed that he received a phone call from Sandy later that day, where she said that her life was in danger and she could not return home, but we really only have his word that this call took place, and if he was the guilty party, of course he would fabricate a story like this in order to divert suspicion away from himself. Even though Billy told Linda Henry about this call that very same day, he did not actually contact the police until 6 days later. Yes, he did say that Sandy told him she would be calling back in a few days, but if your fiancé is telling you she's in danger, aren't you going to feel compelled to involve the police immediately? At the very least, why wouldn't have Billy pressed Sandy for more information about why exactly she was in danger? If Clifford Ailey's story is true, that Billy asked him to have the finance company repossess Sandy's Honda Accord from the Shenango Valley Mall, then you can understand Billy wanting to wait a few days to ensure that the car was out of circulation before he contacted the police. If that's the case, it was a very calculated plan which paid off, since it would be 4 years before the Accord was found in a junkyard, and by that point, it had been crushed so badly that any potential evidence it might have contained was destroyed. You can understand the logic behind this, because if Sandy and her car disappeared together, then it's easier to believe the possibility that she ran away or crashed into a body of water somewhere. Using the repo men as a conduit was a convenient way to get rid of the vehicle without Billy having to get his hands dirty, but this would not have been possible unless there was a lien on the Accord because Sandy was way behind on her car payments. And I think it's too much of a coincidence that this occurred so soon after Ailey conducted a background check on Sandy and learned that she was suffering from serious financial problems. After all, if Sandy wanted to disappear voluntarily, why would she abandon her own car in a parking lot and take the initiative to call the finance company to have it repossessed? So the story that Billy allegedly provided in his confession to Ailey is that he strangled Sandy to death at their home, placed her body inside a container, and buried it at a location about 5 to 6 miles away. If that's what actually happened, then Sandy presumably returned home at some point after she drove away from the convenience store that morning. I mentioned earlier that she and Billy were living together at a house which belonged to Billy's parents, but it's not entirely clear to me if his parents were still living there at the time Sandy went missing, as I don't have any information about them, and they never commented publicly on the whole situation. What's odd is that Billy told Ailey that he had tapped one of the phones and uncovered evidence that Sandy was having an affair, so when he confronted her about it, that's when things escalated into murder. But is there any truth to that at all? As far as I can tell, the investigation never uncovered any evidence that Sandy was having an affair at the time, and if she was, I have no idea who it could have been with. Obviously, if Sandy was romantically involved with another man, then you would have to look at him as a potential alternate suspect, but if investigators have already explored this angle, they never said so publicly. The way this story is presented, it makes Sandy's murder look like a crime of passion where Billy suddenly lost his temper and killed her in a rage, but the angle with the car points to the whole thing being premeditated. Ailey claimed that Billy asked him to contact the finance company about repossessing the vehicle on May the 24th, the day before Sandy went missing, which, if true, shows that Billy planned the whole thing. But if so, what was his motive? Obviously, Billy was none too happy when he learned that Sandy was still married to her previous husband and suffering from a number of financial problems. But if Billy wanted to end things, their wedding hadn't even taken place yet, so why not just end the engagement rather than commit murder? There's also a question of who actually abandoned the Accord at the Shenango Valley Mall. The mall was located about 15 miles from his residence, so obviously, if Billy abandoned the car there himself, he likely would have needed someone else to pick him up and give him a ride home, yet Ailey never admitted to doing this during his original story. It's interesting how we have an eyewitness account of Sandy being seen driving her vehicle southbound towards the town of Sharon, which is only about 2 to 3 miles west of the mall. The details of this sighting are very sketchy, as it's unclear if the witness specifically recalled seeing Sandy at the wheel, or only remembered seeing a dark, blue 1988 Honda Accord, which had a specialized vanity license plate, which had the name Sandy. Well, interestingly enough, Ailey also purchased his very own dark blue 1988 Honda Accord shortly before Sandy went missing, which also seems like quite the coincidence. It's been theorized that this may have been done in case any eyewitnesses recalled seeing Ailey drive Sandy's car on the day she disappeared, as he could just counter that by saying that he was driving his own car. Once again, this seems to point towards Sandy's murder and disappearance being a very elaborate crime that required a lot of planning and premeditation. It's unclear to me if the authorities had much suspicion about Billy during the early stages of the investigation, but it definitely increased when they found Sandy's junked car 4 years later and uncovered evidence that Ailey had arranged for it to be picked up and had lied about a number of things during his original questioning. One thing Ailey lied about was when he denied being in Mercer County on May the 25th, 2000, as his cell phone records placed him in the area that day. That detail is particularly important because Ailey lived in Beaver County and operated his detective agency in Lawrence County. If the entire extent of Ailey's involvement was contacting the finance company, then he could have made the call from either of those locations, and there was no reason he needed to be physically present in Mercer County. Ailey always maintained that he had no face-to-face contact with Billy on May the 25th, and never even met Sandy, but you have to wonder if he was a lot more involved than he let on. According to Ailey, he did not see Billy until they met up at a restaurant on May the 28th, and Billy confessed to Sandy's murder, but there are many aspects of Ailey's story which don't add up. For starters, it seems pretty far-fetched to me that Billy would decide to make this confession in a public place when there are other potential witnesses within earshot. How awkward would it be if a waitress showed up to take their order and inadvertently overheard Billy blabbing about killing his wife? Also, Ailey claimed that Billy pulled out a newspaper and pointed to an article about Sandy's disappearance before he revealed that he was responsible for what happened. But here's the biggest hole in that detail. Numerous sources state that Billy first contacted the police to report Sandy missing on May the 31st, yet Ailey says this restaurant meeting took place on May the 28th. If Sandy hadn't been reported missing yet, why would there be a newspaper article about her disappearance? And of course, there's Ailey's claim that Billy threatened to kill his children if he told anyone what happened. If this was true, then I can understand Ailey not coming forward and lying to police for fear of his children's lives, but the problem is that he never even mentioned this detail until he testified at an evidence suppression hearing in November of 2005, and this apparently took everyone by complete surprise. I mean, this was 4 months after Ailey was originally arrested, and he had already shared his story about Billy's confession with the authorities multiple times by this point, and was in the midst of negotiating a plea deal to avoid prison time. It really does come across like Ailey just decided to throw in this detail in order to generate sympathy for himself, but instead, it only made the authorities question his truthfulness and credibility as a witness, which is why the plea deal ultimately fell through. Since Ailey could have avoided prison time if he simply told the full truth about what happened to Sandy, you have to assume that something happened he did not want to talk about. Remember, this deal hinged on him having no physical involvement in Sandy's murder, so even if all he did was help Billy dispose of her body, or Ailey personally abandoned the car at the shopping mall, this still would have violated his deal. So could Ailey's story have been some sort of mix of truth and fiction? If Ailey played a role in disposing of Sandy's body, then this might explain why his description of its location is so vague, as he claimed Billy told him she was buried about 5 to 8 miles from his parents' home in a spot where, quote-unquote, no one would trip over it. I know investigators performed a search of the area and found nothing, but it's not like they had many specific details to work with. It's almost like Ailey was doing his best to reveal the location of Sandy's body without actually revealing the location of Sandy's body. Now, because Billy is deceased, he obviously cannot be charged with any role he might have had in Sandy's murder. All her family and friends care about is recovering her remains and giving her a proper burial, and Ailey may be the only living person with the necessary knowledge of where to find her. Back in 2012, there was talk about the possibility of Ailey receiving immunity if he revealed the location of Sandy's body, and her children were supportive of this idea, but unfortunately, I haven't heard anything else about it these past 9 years. I know Ailey has since been released, but I have no idea of his current whereabouts, and quite frankly, if it turned out he was no longer alive, I would not be the least bit surprised.
When he appeared in court for his trial in 2006, Ailey was not exactly in the best of health, as he was over 300 pounds and using a wheelchair and looked older than he was. But it's also possible that if Ailey is telling the truth about having no direct involvement in Sandy's murder, then he may not legitimately know where she's buried and has no additional information to share. But if he does know something and is continuing to remain silent, then that's very cowardly, as he may be the last remaining hope of finding her. Obviously, there is not enough evidence to prove with 100% certainty that Sandy was murdered by Billy Crier, but Ailey lied about so many things that you have to assume that he was involved somehow, and I don't think Ailey would have had a motive to harm Sandy unless he was working alongside Billy. If Ailey was complicit, then I guess Sandy's family can take some comfort in knowing that someone served a bit of time in prison for their role in what happened, even if no one was actually charged with murder. But if you happen to have any information on the disappearance of Sandra K. Baker, please contact the Pennsylvania State Police at 724-662-4200. That's 724-662-4200. Another reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. Since last month was October, we decided to release a Halloween-themed episode for our patrons in Tiers 2 and 3 about the infamous Cash Landrum UFO incident, where two women and a child supposedly had an encounter with a UFO on a remote Texas road one night, and may have wound up being exposed to radiation, which gave them serious illnesses. I'm also going to be dropping the occasional exclusive bonus Patreon episode from my spin-off podcast, The Path Went Chilly, and we recently released an episode in which myself and my co-hosts, Jules and Ashley, discussed the unsolved murder of Todd McAfee. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've also recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. I'd also like to take a moment to give a shout-out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Jess S., Michael L., Stephanie L., and Jess K. Thank you all so much for your support. I'm also pleased to announce that The Trail Went Cold has been added to the lineup for Podcast Row at CrimeCon 2022, which is being held in Las Vegas from April the 29th until May the 1st. If you would like to purchase tickets, we already have our own personalized promo code to get a discount. So to receive a 10% discount off a standard badge, please visit crimecon.com and enter the promo code TRAIL. Once again, that's crimecon.com and the promo code is TRAIL. In addition, I wanted to provide another reminder that I hold live streaming sessions on a platform called Get Vocal. Every Thursday night from 7 until 8 p.m. Eastern Time, I host what is essentially an after show for each week's podcast episode, where I have an interactive discussion about the featured case from said episode and answer questions and address comments from listeners. I always include a link to these sessions in our show notes, so be sure to check there for more information or visit getvocal.com. That's GETVOKL.com. I just wanted to give another shout out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online Forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to McGill Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. So have yourself a good week and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. We'll be right back.